establishing corporations that we control or should be able to control, and economic resources that we own. In order to fully appreciate the extent and the nature of ANCSA, let's take a look at what ANCSA did not do. Number one, it did not terminate the unique trust relationship existing between the federal government and the Alaska Natives. Now, it is true that during the consideration of ANCSA in the Congress, several efforts were made to include provisions for termination of that unique trust relationship existing between the federal government and the Alaska Natives. These efforts were made contrary to our wishes at the time. We successfully opposed them by marshaling friends who were willing to represent us. Among several of these, I recall so well the valiant efforts of Senator Ted Kennedy from Massachusetts and Senator Fred Harris, who was then serving in the Senate from the state of Oklahoma. Two, ANCSA did not answer questions as to the tribal status, tribal governments, and sovereignty as they relate to the Alaska Natives. So although these matters have seemingly come full-blown to come before us today as questions that require answers, these specific concerns were not addressed in ANCSA. The best we can do is to say that at least this relationship, not fully defined as pertains to the natives of Alaska, was not terminated. Three, ANCSA did not determine how Alaska Natives should or should not relate to their native village and regional corporations. Whatever the many faults that we find, and I share these perceptions with you that they are numerous, the Congress largely felt that up to us as a Native people to work out just how the regional corporations would proceed and how the administration would be brought to accounts by the Native shareholders. Four, ANCSA did not provide a mechanism for preparing the Alaska Natives for their newly acquired status as corporate shareholders. It left that responsibility instead to the Native people themselves and their newly formed village, urban, and regional corporations. Given the opportunity to observe the implementation of ANCSA over the past 13 years, I've developed a list of concerns. Some of these might be called shortcomings. These concerns either relate to ANCSA itself, in which case an amendment might be an appropriate vehicle for addressing these concerns. Some of these are merely concerns which don't fit into a specific category. But given the opportunity to voice them here tonight, I've chosen to do so. When ANCSA became law in 1971 and the Native corporations were chartered under Alaska state law, speaking as one individual among a number privileged to be working on the law then, my personal hope is that I hope that we as a Native people would have the vision to develop corporations that on the one hand would combine the best aspects of successful functioning business entities. We realize, and certainly I realize, that we had to be able to compete, we had to be able to cause our assets to grow, we had to be able to envision the complete spectrum of the kind of stewardship that we would have in the corporations as pertained to the assets of the people. Well, I felt we had to, and I hope that we would be able to take that business-like aspect of corporations and combine those with the people orientation sensitivity that would enable us to shape a corporate model of our choosing. I felt that, and I hope that initially, to whatever extent these corporations might resemble and imitate to some extent the IBMs, the AT&T, the General Motors, and others, I hope we would be able to add something specific that would make them successful in the business world and yet native corporations having a sensitivity to their people. I hope we then that we wouldn't fall into the trap of becoming like other corporations. That hasn't happened, which doesn't mean to say it could not. But I feel we've fallen short of at least that personal dream. ANCSA corporations have been miserable failures in educating their shareholders. I no longer believe that they retain enough credibility as disinterested and knowledgeable entities to enable them to become the vehicles for stockholder education programs in the future. In other words, we need, and we have been needing for 13 years, a concerted, continuous program of education, not worked in so much from the top down as worked from the grassroots up, so that when it is completed, such a program would not be alien to the elders, but rather they would embrace it as something that they helped to conceive, to shape, to develop. The task of education perhaps might be better performed by the tribal governing body or the nonprofit corporations in the various regions. But I simply don't believe that the ANCSA corporations, which have as a primary consideration re-election, retention of power, are the proper vehicles, simply because were they to engage in the educational enterprise, I consider they would be suspect as to their motives. Two, ANCSA corporations stress the retention of management's control. Now, I don't say that this is inappropriate or wrong. It was true when I was the president, and it was true when I was no longer president. However, this political re-election process has been taking more corporate time, more corporate energy, and money, to the point where I wonder what the priorities of our corporations are. And this is what has been happening over the past several years. It has led to what I call a short-sighted fortress mentality, in which anyone wanting to be involved in helping to direct the corporation is considered a dissident, which I assume must be the title used for a newly emerging tribe that is resulting from the native land claims. If so, if all dissidents were to stand up, I guess there'd be a good number of us. Three, the ANCSA corporations, because of these pressures for considering yearly re-election campaigns and annual reports, and an understandable desire to satisfy the shareholders by delivering an encouraging bottom line profit and loss report, tend to focus on the immediate to such an extent that they tend to shortchange the importance of long-range goals, because the long-range goals or their development don't represent political currency. And I think this is true not just of ANCSA corporations, but it's true of corporations in the business community as a whole. Rarely do the individuals who have the vision and the discipline to develop the long-range goals that are ultimately developed by the corporation, rarely do such ever receive political benefit from such vision. Generally, they are gone before some of the first steps are realized. But these long-range goals not only have to be done, but if you look to yourselves as a native person, as an Indian, Eskimo, or Aleut, what would be more logical to your way of thinking than to think how it was with your parents and your grandparents? In their terms, a lifetime was a short span of time. In their terms, in our culture, several lifespans was just a period of time. There were no artificial beginnings and ends to the planning that they did. Each of the seasons, bringing the fish and the berries and the game, was again one step in a continuing process. I'll tell you this, the elders would have been much better prepared for long-range planning than we, who presumably have better experience and education, are today. And I think we need to pull in some of the practices that they've had and find a way to incorporate them into the planning that goes on in our corporations. The fact is, without such long-term plans, we will have a tendency toward expediency, toward that which makes the bottom line look good for this year, toward that which supports and helps to advance a campaign for re-election. As just about all of us appreciate, under current law, the Alaska Natives born after December 18, 1971 are not eligible to be shareholders. The reason I mentioned so many of the pressures and so many of the organizations that were pressuring us during the lobbying that was a part of the land claims passage was to indicate that not everything came out as we wished. And sometimes we, in the midst of fighting the various pressures, occasionally came out with a version of the law which was not perfect, and this is one of them. I would recommend that the law should be so amended that Alaska Natives born after December 18, 1971, who would otherwise qualify, would be allowed to enroll as Native Corporation shareholders. I think this would have a tremendously unifying effect on us as tribes. It would show our young people that we care more about them than we do about the few dollars that might be affected simply because we would have more shareholders. What's more important, the strong tribe, continuity, or having a few more bucks that we can spend? I believe also that proposals to the state legislature intended to change the effect of the laws affecting Native corporations should be preceded by extensively publicized explanations to the Native shareholders. What management wants does not always reflect what the shareholders want. Now, this isn't true just of ANCSA corporations, it is true of other corporations. But the point I am making is that the shareholders have a right to know ahead of time just what the corporations are proposing for consideration by the state legislature. After all, once they hit the hopper in the state legislature, those proposed bills are no longer secrets, they are public property. I further believe that allowing simultaneous membership on village or urban corporations and regional corporations operates to the detriment of both corporations. I think it induces a measure of paralysis in the directors who never completely answer the question, who do I represent? For whom will I fight the hardest? I had the experience of going to an urban corporation meeting. With great pride, the president stood up and said, "We managed to negotiate very successfully with the Sea Alaska Timber Corporation." He negotiated for the urban corporation for which he was president. He was also a director on the Sea Alaska Corporation. Maybe he knew who he was representing. I did not. The native corporations also experience an inevitable internal conflict in the administration of their affairs in one particular respect. They are responsible for profit and loss, the bottom line, and no one can fault this. They are also concerned about preservation of the environment, as all of us are or should be. However, this conflict comes into being when, on the one hand, a corporation is charged with the responsibility for maximizing the profit from the harvesting of timber, while at the same time, it is expected to act in the best interest of the environment while it is harvesting this timber. Which is the greater consideration? I think here the answer is not one that requires statutory amendment. I think it is one which can be taken care of simply by the assumption of the responsibility, either by the tribal organization or the nonprofit arm, to act as the overseer with respect to the protection of the environment. This should be done in a way that leaves it free from political relationships to the corporation. This also includes simultaneous representation by individuals holding policy positions in both organizations. 1991 has a crucial significance. It is a significance which, as I have read what the corporations across the state have had to say, as they have viewed this significance, they have viewed it in terms of one correctable or addressable largely by the consideration of amendment to ANCSA. I think that they've looked too much to amendments as panaceas for their ills or cure-alls for shortcomings. I think they need to look a little more to themselves, a little more internally. Because 1991 has a crucial significance for all Native shareholders, for then with the issuance of shares that can be sold, we Native shareholders will be making a vital decision to sell or not to sell our shares. It's easier for us to make what we would think would be the kind of decision we will make then. But when we are faced with the opportunity to convert our shares into immediate cash, this will pose a difficult decision. Because what is the alternative? How thoroughly has the alternative to selling actually been discussed? I don't mean in terms of do we know that the regional corporations would like us to retain our stock, but rather the question of why. Why should we retain our stock? If my corporation were to seek my support for extending the period, which ends in 1991, during which the shares could not be sold, absent any other provision in their proposal, I would vote no on extending 1991 to a later date. It'd be an emphatic no, because I would have to ask the reason why should that date be put off? What benefit will there be to us? There has to be more than a proposal of let's extend the period for non-alienability, that is the period during which the stock could not be sold. If the corporations have been such dismal failures in the education of their shareholders over the past 13 years, what assurances do I have personally that they would do any better given 10 or 20 more years in which ANCSA shares could not be sold? I think that a provision for the extension of that date for non-sale of shares has to be accompanied by a very specific commitment by the corporation to a plan that addresses some of these shortcomings in education. Without it, I'd say let's forget the extension, let's address the question right now of sell or not selling. This is from a 1991 perspective. The native people living in the villages in rural Alaska or the bush, the people whose existence depended on subsistence hunting and fishing, and who lived as their parents and their grandparents had lived, were vital to the land claims movement. They used and occupied their lands. Now, maybe the native elders lack the ability to articulate the use and occupancy of their ancestral lands in the complex legal terminology of the white man's law. But when they described how they used their land, how they subsisted on its bounty, and how they had fought to protect it from others, they were using layman's terms to describe the basis of Aboriginal or Indian title. So while a lot of us were comfortable in the city, the people in Bush Alaska and the villages continued to use and occupy those lands. And that gave added strength to our assertions before the Congress as to why we were entitled to a Land Claims Act. We have an obligation to Indian Eskimos and Aleut elders that will not be fulfilled by lip service focus on the preservation of the languages, costumes, songs, and dances. I greatly respect these, and I think if my concern is misunderstood, I will probably emerge as someone who did not respect the preservation of the languages, costumes, songs, and dances. What I'm saying is these are merely a starting pad. I do not believe for one moment that the elders should be given these things so that they will be satisfied and not want to be meaningfully included where the power is, where the decisions are to be made. And the fact is, largely, they are being excluded the way the administration of ANCSA is proceeding today, simply because, through no fault of their own and having nothing to do with their basic intelligence, they are being excluded. And I, for one, do not think that they want to settle for the status quo, for what has happened up to this time. We need to commit ourselves to the development of the kind of educational program that I referred to earlier, which in large part would be developed with the elders, because they would be one of the primary targets. One of them, the young people, would be the other. And the purpose would be the enhancement of their understanding of the ANCSA issues and mechanics. So what was just said of the elders, as I mentioned, can also be said of the young shareholders, who may grow up to assume control of their own destinies and to exercise that self-determination that we think is so important, only to be told when they are old enough to run the corporations that a multinational corporation had assumed control of their corporation and was now the owners of their resources. And that could happen if we do not have more visionary, inspired leadership than we have had to date. I would like to express my support for consideration of the following, not because I completely endorse it as the answer, but because I am consider that it should be an option that we have available to us. I would endorse efforts to seek a method of transferring the regional corporation lands to counterpart tribal governing bodies. I do not say that this would be the final answer, but such an added option would help to improve our current situation. A tribal governing body more nearly reflects the long-range concerns of our people. It is the nature of a tribal governing body to be timeless in the considerations of matters that occur to it. To a tribal governing body planning for the harvesting of timber, over the life cycle of the timber, over 100 years, in the life of a tribe is really a short time. And we have to have the vision, the self-discipline to do these things. And I feel that the tribal governing body may be the vehicle. I'm not certain, but I think it should be considered. I feel that the tribal governing body would be more attuned to the day-to-day concerns of the people. The people themselves would better understand the lines of authority. They would know better how to demand accountability, something that generally confuses them today, where corporate boards and corporate management are concerned. I think if you sense that out of my concerns as I have expressed them, they address largely a concern I feel about the increasing alienability, the sense of apartness, of separateness, of shareholders from a corporation which is so powerful, so successful in terms of its economic worth and the worth of its assets. If you sense that I'm very much concerned about this growing disenchantment, that assumption would be correct, and I hope to a large extent some of the specific concerns I've shared tonight will help to spell out what I feel is a need for the corporations, particularly the regional corporations, to proceed further with the redefinition of why they exist. I know, as I've had occasion to look at the circumstances then present when the law passed, I, along with others who were present then and who played a role in the passage of that law, appreciate the dreams we had for the benefits that would come to the native people. We were fighting off land losses. We were going to have compensation. We were going to be able to manage things so that our people would receive specific benefits. They would feel the closeness of the corporation that would understand them, that would respond to them. Somehow things are not occurring as I had hoped they would. I'm not at all prepared to throw in the towel, or I wouldn't have offered some considerations for either changes in administration or possible amendments to the law. But I do think we need to have the boldness and the vision and the courage to consider some real changes, even if these changes adversely affect the vested interests of various officers or directors. One of the big questions that we had to consider, as I conclude, Mr. Chairman, during the administration of the land claims was this. It wasn't just a matter of money or compensation or land. It wasn't just a matter of subsistence. But we had to ask this question of ourselves. Do we have the will? Do we have the will to demand, to fight for what we consider to be the terms of a just Land Claims Settlement Act? I think today, Mr. Chairman, the question can be addressed now to its administration. Do we have the will to consider the kinds of changes that need to be made? Do we have the courage to look back at what was intended to be and to ask the question, what changes should be made so we can realize the dreams that we had in 1971? I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to address the Commission. I want, for the record, to indicate my full support, endorsement, and approval of what the Commission, the Native Review Commission, is engaged in. And since I am now leaving the table and you will not be able to rule on my behavior, I also want to commend you for what I consider to be an exemplary performance that all of us have appreciated. I do, however, add this one note. And when the Tlingit says, however, there is one more thing, prepare ye yourself for what is to come. We have noticed with great approval that you have already started to absorb some of our customs, the chief of which is Indian time. A group of us, Mr. Chairman, were talking tonight, and we said, isn't it fine that Judge Berger knows our customs so well that he knows Indian time? And someone said, yes, but this is unusual because we're the Indians and we're waiting for him. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Warren. remain standing over here, introduce myself, Sam Newman. I live in Douglas, I'm from Rangoon. I'm a shareholder, Gold Belt in Sea, Alaska, but also Sitka. So I have a business before with a boat. I have a little idea of a business. So I'm gonna mention that Land Claim Settlement Act, we're not satisfied with it. There's a lot of things in there, we're not satisfied with it. So I'm gonna just shortcut and going over. James Watt, Reagan selects James Watt. He's the one that make it worse for us, land selection. The most of the villages, they never make land selection. So just how much pressure against us from this state. They even changed the subsistence, what they make for us. They cut it down to 25 fish. It just to give the odd point there, looking at it. So a lot of things in the Land Claim Settlement Act, we're not satisfied with it, which is make us second class citizen. That's the one who don't like it. So we didn't know how it's written when they first got it. They just handed over to us just like that. You're gonna go by this 20 years only, 20 years. So we feel Alaska belongs to our people. We feel anything that comes off from Alaska, we should get royalty from it. That's the way we feel about it. And then also we feel we continue on with the business all the way till we clean out the trees. They only limit us 20 years. And they're gonna push us someplace there in the woods. We didn't know. So most of us, our children get drafted, die for our country. Well, we consider ourselves, we were born under the United States flag. I'm not mad at you, just going over what happened to us. I don't create it, the words. Now what I'm saying, the truth. So just plain fact, what I'm saying, maybe we hope we'll continue on with our business long as we live. And the land, we don't want to pay no tax on it because we feel we'll own the land. Then we feel better. Then our children are gonna have it. So our grandchildren, they'll be out of luck the way it's written now. Everything is hard. So we all know this is inflation. So everybody understand that point there. We try to make a business, and yet they're fighting us all the time from the states. So I would say myself, I repeat it again, we should have our land and no tax on it. That will help our grandchildren our future. That's what I'm speaking. I'm speaking for whole Alaska, not only Juneau. So we all feel that we can say that our land, this is our land. I have a priority. I can say anything. If you go in your property, they wouldn't. If it's not your property, you wouldn't say anything. So we feel this is our property. We could say anything now. We want this. We want to get our land. We want to continue on with our business. Clean out all the trees there, like the white people clean all the fish out from Alaska. I used to fish. I have a boat before. I've seen how it's taken it off. And that fish was taken off from Alaska. We should get a royalty, maybe 10% or 50% out of that fish coming out from Alaska. And then we kept quiet. Now we want the land. That's the first time we speak up. Thank you.
I didn't use this one.
Yeah, my name is David Willard. It's hard. I'm going through a dental process. It's hard for me to talk. I'll make it very brief as I can. I am a shareholder, 13th Regional, Seattle. Because of the death in our immediate family, I am now also shareholder, Sea Alaska, and the Village Corporation at Angoon Hoots Nuu Incorporated. I would like to just a few points how I think the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act has affected my life, our lives. Also, I went to the University of Washington as an undergraduate student, equivalent to about 2 years. Business administration, accounting major and minor sociology. I would like to mention sociology because there are three different social levels, which I think is very important, not only in the Western civilization world, but in our native world. The social level, those who never went beyond eighth grade and those who never went beyond high school, and the college level. But first, I would like to go back to Angoon, 1980. I came up from Seattle. I spent 25 years in Seattle. I worked with business and professional people all my life in Seattle. And I came to Angoon, which is my original hometown. I first worked a few months for the city of Angoon as in a position of office manager. I was getting into the area of I was beginning to find out more about the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, the Village Corporation, the enactment of it, and what's going on in the villages, how it affects the villages. The one thing I noticed, working in the office, I made several telephone calls for monies that the village, as the city of Angoon, was seeking for the city. Juneau, Ketchikan, Fairbanks, they all get funded by the federal, by the state, highways, superhighways, bike paths, you name it, they get it. I called an office similar to the Community Regional Affairs Office. This was up north in Anchorage, long distance. How the funds would be available to us for Angoon. We were out hustling for money for the village. In my position, I had to. And the gentleman in that office that I was talking to long distance said, you would have been entitled to that money, but now that you're under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, you have land, and you got money coming in, you're not entitled to this one. That is how I believe the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act will start affecting our lives. Number two, the Alaska Fishing Game held hearings similar to this in a community in Southeast Alaska. And while I was at Angoon, I attended. This had to do with trolling and permit. One of the natives from the community spoke up and said, we have old people in the community, they're fishermen, they've been fishermen all their lives, they want to troll. Can we make an exception and not get a permit for them under the state plan where you have to be a holder of a permit? And the gentleman who answered the question spoke up immediately, said, Your Indian rights were extinguished under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. So we cannot make any exception for one individual or certain parties in the village. Now these were the words of non-natives holding high position, high caliber offices for the state and federal government making these statements to us. This is how I feel that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is affecting our lives daily, almost, you might say. And the other one is, I'll come down quickly so others can have a chance, is in the social level, in the village, we speak of urban, which is the city, and the rural, which is the village. All these terminologies, we have corporate officers, I can very frankly say, that have fifth and sixth grade level, that are holding and are commanding the highest offices in running the corporation in the village level. And I feel that there are outside interests that are influencing not only the rural corporation, the village corporation, but also the urban corporations. The appeal is made directly, possibly, by the outsiders, whether white organizations or federal or state level or city like Juneau, is that they know they can get by to make that decision because we have enough indigenous native people in the social level way down who cannot understand what is being incorporated. And I got up at a meeting once that about a boundary line for the selection of a, and I explained why a certain Bay Area should be included in that selection. And I do not have the expertise of a lawyer from a law firm or a background experience in corporate work. But after all the explanation I had made, which would benefit the stockholders of that village corporation for all time to come, if it was would generate not only an idea, but it would be something that could be incorporated into our land selection. And when I sat down, I felt as if I did not influence any stockholder attending that meeting. Three distinct social levels, and I cannot get to the first social level. I don't think I was using a hard word, but we seem to have open and closed minds that we cannot accept the word of our own stockholders as natives, but we would be more willing to accept the words of others outside of this corporation. I feel that big corporations, like, I'm going to take Angoon for an example, because I believe you are going to Angoon. I feel there are outside influences that will affect our life for all generations to come. There are outside influences that are working directly with the board of directors. And I'm going to frankly say which one it is in the case of Angoon. I'm not saying this because I want to put down the board of directors. I'm not saying this because I want to put down the stockholders. I'm saying this because how outside influence is generating the greatest decision in the wrong direction. It will benefit the outside people later, but they are using us now in this level. The environmentalist group, most of us when we read the paper will say environmentalist group. We're speaking of the Sierra Club, the National Audubon Society, there's a local group they call CIAT. They have generated so much influence over the indigenous level of our people. And they even make our people believe that this land is yours. Hey man, you can get up and say what you want about it. Nobody can take it away from you.
No way.
There was a law that was passed by Act of Congress. Under the Forest Service, the U.S. Forest Service was made the management. The U.S. Tongass National Forest. All of Southeast Alaska became the U.S. Tongass National Forest by law. You take the Admiralty Island, the whole of the Admiralty Island became federal land under the U.S. Tongass National Forest. And I inquired about the U.S. Forest Service, and he said, the line, where is the line? Well, the city of Angoon, there's a small line right around tight. They didn't allow 100 yards this way. Once you pass the Angoon Trading Company, which is a store, once you step over that line, just a few feet, you are walking on federal land. You are not walking on an Indian claim. Land your grandparents owned 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, you are on federal land. But our board of directors and our native leaders allow our old custom people to get up at a public gathering meetings and say, we allow them to make those speeches, you know, in our public meetings. The Wilderness Act came in, finally, under the Carter administration. The National Monument came into being. Two un-native corporations, urban corporations, are trying to get land on the Admiralty Island. And the law firms, I believe over a period of time, the law firms have maybe received hundreds of thousands of dollars in fees for a legal battle over to cut timber on the Admiralty. We allow, because of the indigenous level, we allow the board of directors of the corporations allow these indigenous people to make statements which are false, which I think is wrong because it's going to hurt us, all of us, in the future. The environmentalist group are strongly using a village corporation on a national scale level almost. And the urban corporations and native corporations are going to be hurt by it. One of the longest islands is in the island group in Southeast Alaska. The longest island is Admiralty Island. And Admiralty Island has over 1 million acres. If three native corporations came on the Admiralty Island and made 30,000 acre selection each, or 15,000 each, it is not going to hurt the bald eagles. It is not going to hurt the brown bears. It is going to generate millions of dollars of income will come into the treasure of the native corporations. Today, the environmentalist groups are using the village corporations to get what they want. But our indigenous people level don't see it, and I cannot stand to the village corporation and explain this. I would be shot down. And here I would be talking for them, but they would not accept it. I think that's how I feel the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act affects my life, our life, and us as shareholders. I very strongly feel that just in closing, I would like to say this. While I was in a restaurant in Seattle, this was in 1971 or 70, they were beginning to organize the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The regional corporations were being organized for the first time around. A non-native, a white, was at the restaurant, turned around, kept looking at me. Finally, he came over and said, "Pardon me, may I ask you a question?" He said, "Are you Indian? Are you from Southeast Alaska?" I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Are you familiar with the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act?" I said, "No, but I heard about it. It's in the news." He said, "Let me tell you something." I never asked his name, and to this day, I have not seen that gentleman. He said, "May I tell you something?" And we didn't talk any more after that because nothing more was said. "Did you know that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is so designed that the white man will eventually take over and take control?" I said, "No." And that was all that was said. But I can see it coming on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Thank you for your views on logging on Admiralty Island. We're going to Sitka tomorrow and to Angoon on Saturday, and I have the feeling we may hear more about it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my name is Bob Milton, shareholder of Sea Alaska. I'd like to look at this through my father's eyes and my grandfather's eyes when these settlement acts were first forming in their minds. I think I've heard them refer to it as saying that, isn't it something that just a stroke of a pen put on a written down on a piece of paper could push a whole tribe out of their land. In those early days, it was not really known as to how to acquire land. Of course, at the time, Native people were willing to share their land with the white people that were coming here. And acquiring their own land was something new to them, but they saw this working. People from all parts of the world were coming in with a constitutional right in their hand and a piece of paper saying that the land that you have applied for is now yours, and not giving any consideration to those people that are living on that land, which would be the Native people, and being pushed off that. Looking through their eyes, I wonder how they felt that this thing was happening to them when they were governing themselves long before the white people had come up to Alaska. This was their land. This was Alaska, Native people's land. And wildlife, fish, everything was plentiful. They were willing to share with everybody the resources. But after seeing these things were taking place and seeing the people being so rude and disrespectful to their willing to share the land with them, they start thinking about, well, they're taking so many stuff out of our land. I'm sure they should be giving us some of the wealth that they are getting from what they're taking out of our land. But this never came about for years and years. Of course, at the time, Washington, D.C. was pretty hard to communicate with. This was the territory of the United States. We didn't have no representatives from Alaska. And communication was very hard. So as the time went by, people from all over, more people were coming. And realizing that there was no way that they're going to get their land back, they start looking in ways to get to the people that would help them, which would be in Washington, D.C. I think it's pretty hard to imagine what has gone through their mind at the time, seeing the land and the waters being depleted from fish. In recent years, not too long ago, that Japanese, the Russians, anybody who can fish out there were permitted to fish. But the natives were given the not very much choice to do that. Now we're so limited in fishing, we have to look elsewhere to make our living. The sports fishermen have more of a voice than what we do in this land and in that resource, fishing. The Alaska Settlement Act, I don't think is really the answer to the problems that we are experiencing now. And I think it needs to be improved if it can be. If there's an amendment that can be made to that, I think it would help if Washington and the state would realize the first people that were here in Alaska, and if they could give a little percentage of what they're making from the land of Alaska, which the natives have claimed their own years and years ago. The state is making millions and millions of dollars, but here we sit as natives without a penny from the resource that the state and the oil companies are making. I think it would really benefit the future generation that is coming, that we're thinking of. All I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.